Good morning. Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. With me is corporate attorney Rich Honan, who pays us a visit once a month. So it's 8 days into September. Where has he been? We talk about headlines from the business world. Today, we're going to talk about presidential candidates who are CEOs. It's a very interesting topic, I think. To help sort this all out, we welcome Rich Honan, the Phillips Lytle, with Phillips Lytle LLP, where he is partner in charge of the Albany office. Rich, good morning. How are you?
I am well. How are you?
I'm fine. It's always good to see you. Thank you very much for being with us. Very nice to have you here. So the idea here is that often we talk about the business world. We talk about the role of CEOs. We talk about the corporate world versus the real world. And now we have, if we are to believe the latest polls that we see, what they have in common on the Republican side, at least, is that you have three candidates who are emerging, and all of them, A, outsiders, B, have a business background. Donald Trump, Carly Fiorina, and Dr. Ben Carson.
Right.
All right. So with that, what do we make of, let us begin with, what do we make of the fact that those are the three candidates who, at this point, very early, are emerging?
Well, I think all the pundits, and in this case, I think I agree with the pundits. Everybody says that this is a reflection of people looking at, you know, to outsiders, and a reflection of people's frustration with, you know, with the inside the beltway politics. And I think we'd all agree with that, right? As well as the fact that, you know, the media really needs something to talk about for the next, 16 months or whatever it is.
I know we do on this show.
Right, exactly. I always thought that was one of the reasons I was always invited back.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of content to fill.
We love you and we need the content. Sure, I'll admit to that.
Right. We need the eggs. So there is time to fill, and obviously it's more fun to talk about people from outside the kind of the cycle than, you know, some senator or governor or something like that. But they have resonated with the people, and again, the pundits say it's because of the frustration with Washington, and I buy that. So I think that's the interesting thing. But it's clear, you know, Trump is clearly a CEO. Carly is known first and foremost, really, as a CEO. You know, Ben Carson, I wouldn't call him a CEO, but he is somebody who has. You know, he ran, you know, units at his hospitals,
right.
and obviously has management skills.
Not a what you would call a career politician.
Yeah, correct. And none of them are. So we're finally, you know, guys like me have been saying forever, it'd be nice to bring some kind of business acumen to Washington. And I think the last time I was on, you said, and guys like you, are saying,
guys like me,
you guys are loving it because they say, okay, you guys always wanted a CEO, you always wanted a businessman, and here you have Donald Trump. So, you know, square that with what you were trying to get. A little bit.
I don't know. Well, here's what I don't know. I don't know. We just talked about this with on the Congressional Corner. Here's what I don't know. Are we in love with Donald Trump as a nation? You know, the we.
Right.
are we as the, or the people who are responding to the polls, are they in love with Donald Trump because of what you just posited as because of those business principles, or because he is an outsider, he doesn't have to play by the rules that other people have to play by, and seems whatever comes his way just kind of brushes it off his shoulder and keeps moving? And I, for one, find that both, I find it annoyingly fascinating.
That's a good way to say it. And the answer is no, I don't think anybody is necessarily in love with Donald Trump. If anyone is, I don't think anyone is in love with Donald Trump, because of necessarily his business principles, but I will say that the skill set and the things that he learned in being a business person are things that are coming out in the campaign, as it is for Carly. And I would say the same thing for Ben Carson. Ben Carson, maybe even more so, bringing his life experience to his campaign. And by that, I mean, speaking your mind.
Yes.
And I think this is very important. Understanding that you have various constituencies and they are always going to conflict. And I think that's something that people in business have made peace with and people in politics continue to struggle with. People in business say, look, you know, there's some percentage of the people who are going to like what I say and an equal percentage are going to dislike it, right? If you lay off 10,000 people and those 10,000 people are really unhappy with you, but your shareholders are happy with you because you have increased your share value. Excuse me. So you're dealing with conflicting constituencies all the time as a CEO. And Trump doesn't have a problem with that, and neither do the other CEOs. They know that's the lay of the land.
The one thing about Donald Trump, though, that I find interesting is in contrast to Carly Fiorina, who says this is what we did as a company. When I was head of, we did this as a company.
Right.
We did this as a company. And Trump, it's me. I did it.
Look,
this company wouldn't be a company. It's my name. It's my company. I'm it. And if you take me out of the equation, then everything's gone.
I that's true. And look, Trump is not your typical CEO, right? You could argue that Carly Fiorina, from secretary to CEO, is not necessary, but she's actually had a more typical career path. Right? Than he has.
Absolutely. Right? And can
he's
I
the
just...
son of a rich guy who took over the family business.
Okay. So then let me just ask you this question, okay. Not to, because this isn't a tangent, it's just because I want to lay this. I want to lay this groundwork before we move, we discuss this further, which is let us go to the baseline here. Do you believe he's a successful businessman? There are some people who are looking at and say, well, he there's this many bankruptcies, there's this much time where he lost this much money, which I don't know, sometimes just seems to me the cost of doing business. I don't know. Do you consider him to be a successful businessman?
Oh, sure. I mean, if his balance sheet is in fact in the billions, if it is, and if you're telling me that it's a net positive in the billion, in other words, I don't know, you never know with him. He might say I have $9 billion in assets and I have $12 billion in liabilities, but no, I mean, as a business person, sure, he's successful. I mean, to the extent he has started with... by all accounts, this is a stupid thing to say, a few hundred million, right? When he took over the business from his father and now he's in the billions. If that's true, that's a success. If he's cash flowing and he appears to be, that's a success. So yeah, I think by any account, he's a successful business person. The fact that he's had bankruptcies along the way, the fact that there's lots of creditors and lots of banks and bondholders who aren't happy with him. The question is, would they invest with him now? If he presented a project, and I think many of them might. You go in forewarned. But yeah, I do think he's successful. I don't think he's your typical CEO, and I think that he's not necessarily the poster child for this is why we need a CEO in the White House. Because you're right, he came from a different... Carly came from a much more structured... up through the organization, saying all the right things kind of background.
As weird as this is, I was just as we were on the air, this came over at 11:42, so a minute ago.
Okay.
From Carly Fiorina's campaign.
Okay.
And they're oddly looking for cash. Okay. But there's a line in here. It says, I'll be honest, I spent decades climbing the ladder in the business world, going from a secretary to the CEO of one of the world's largest tech companies. I'm used to being underestimated and I'm used to fighting back. And the whole point is she wants $13. So, which seems very specific, but whatever.
She wants $13?
Yeah, $13. So, which seems unlucky, but whatever.
Okay.
So, and the whole point is that during the first debate, she didn't even make the main debate. And she did very, very well, I think by all measures,
right,
in the first debate. And now, as the second debate nears at the Reagan Library on CNN, she probably, most probably, will be on that stage because she has surged in the polls.
Right.
as I'm sure as a result of her doing so well and has emerged as a front runner, if you will. Okay, so now what do we make of her that idea? Because here's what she's saying is that we can weather any attack. We can do. She's these things as CEO of saying, look, I'm used to being underestimated. I'm used to fighting back. I'm used to.
Yeah.
I mean, all of these things that I've had to deal with in the business world, this is my day job.
Right. Exactly. And that's where the CEO-ness of a person, I think, really helps them. I think it doesn't help Trump because he came up a different way, right? But I think, and it doesn't have to be a CEO, but anybody who's made their way through business and has made it up to business at, you know, what we perceive to be a high level, first, they are so used to being criticized all the time. I can't tell you how many times I'll have a client call me, and my clients call and they say, Rich, you know, this person said this, and this, or, you know, the bank said this, and this, and, you know, I'm really angry. And I'll say, oh my God, I get called that, you know, 10 times before breakfast, you know? I mean, they question this and they question my integrity. I'm like, grow up, you know? I've been running businesses forever. I mean, I'm not even talking about my skill set as a lawyer. I'm just saying with my management hat on, yeah, I have people all the time saying they disagree and I was wrong and they were, yeah. And I think, people in business have learned to assimilate that, and I think that's what Carly Fiorina is saying there. It's like I'm used to this, right? It's just another day at the office. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that she's going to have a better plan for immigration than, you know, say Barack Obama does or something. But I think the point they're trying to make is they understand the process, whether you want to call it the collaborative process or just the communication process,
right.
And. I think people would argue, somebody might argue that some of the things that Obama, for example, has been criticized on process-wise are things that would have made him an unsuccessful CEO. You know, his unwillingness to collaborate, unwillingness to communicate, kind of with the minions, you know, the congressmen and things like that.
Sure.
True or not, and I think there's been enough people on both sides saying that there might be some truth to that.
There's some truth to the communication issue, sure.
Those are things that would probably have, you know, if Carly couldn't do that, she probably would not have become a CEO.
Yeah.
Right. Trump would have because, you know, his dad owned the business. But I think there are those are the things that when people say, I want to have a business person, not that they're smarter, not that they're going to have better answers, but I think they might manage the process far better. I mean, can't you imagine Ben Carson, for example, managing pick a singular transaction, whether it's the Iran deal or immigration. Don't you believe that he would manage the communication process differently than, say, you know, other candidates or the way Obama has? Or do you get that sense?
Well,
I do.
But here, I guess we'll bring us to the point, the turning point in the conversation, if you will, which is okay. And I guess you can make that case at different junctures for different people. But then, what is more important? So, is that skill more important than other skills? So, what we've seen over the past few weeks, with Ben Carson, we saw it in the debate on Fox. They took in the first 15 minutes of that debate. Well, here's everything that you said that was stupid, and they threw it back at him and said, How do you feel that you are qualified to be president of the United States when you don't even know this?
Right.
You may be a doctor. You may be really smart, but and now we're seeing with Trump. Although again, this doesn't really seem to matter with him. Is that he goes on to a conservative talk show over the weekend and they start talking foreign policy with him. He doesn't know.
And he gets confused.
He doesn't know anything. Right. He doesn't admits it. I don't know. Why should I know that? I'll hire somebody who'll know that. I don't know what. And so what is more important then? So which basically brings us down to the question that we often ask with you when you're on the program is that a good idea? Do we need a CEO as a president or do we need somebody who can balance both, who is a politician, who has an understanding of business and who has an understanding of CEO principles?
It's not so much. The answer is I think we need somebody with the skill set that, whether you call it the skill set, you know, of a doctor, or the skill set of a CEO, or the skill set of a teacher, or the skill set of anyone who seeks, you know, a collaborative process, who seeks to kind of bring people on board, who seeks to bring people together. I actually think for where the country is now, that is, yes, that's more important. Joe, I'll say that's more important than the results. I think if somebody comes in and...
Well, what does that mean?
Well, for example, right now people will say, well, look, you know, Obama, you know, he's triumphed on his legislative agenda, right? He's passed.
Oh, you mean the political? Mean the results of them being in an office, not just winning the office?
Yeah, correct.
I understand.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So you're with me on that?
Yes.
And look, you win the office. One thing we know these days is you win the office, however you win the office, right? I mean, basically.
It costs a lot of money and you get really dirty.
Yeah, I mean, basically the person who has the most money working for them wins, right? That's basically, it's pretty much.
Well, I don't know. We'll see.
I didn't say who raises the most money. I said has the most money working for them with PACs and things like that.
Yes, okay. I'll give you that.
And then you basically, you say anything. You say anything you want. You say whatever you need to say, and then you clean it up when you get elected. And
right.
You know, I'm sorry to say that, but that's what happens. And then, you know, depending on, you know, which side of the fence you're on, then people either bring up the things you said or they don't. So I think you get elected however you get elected. But I thought what we're wondering is, would somebody with that skill set make a better leader, be better for the country? And I think in many ways, yes. I think that the passing of the legislative agenda isn't the end all and be all, as we can see now.
All right. So let me zoom out for a second.
Okay.
That's just us, you and me. Right. Just talking. Like we often do. All right. So whatever political persuasion you are, whatever political persuasion I am, I look at the slate of candidates on both sides, and I think to myself, really?
I did for a while. Yeah.
So my question to you is, given your political persuasion, mm-hmm. are you really looking? I mean, you have 17 candidates
right.
to choose from. I mean, are you finding the person that you say, wow, I feel really good about this. I feel really strong about this particular person. This is what I like. This is what I can get behind, and I'm not. I'm just asking: is there somebody that you're really excited about?
The answer is no. There's nobody I'm excited about, there's nobody.
I'll tell you, on my side, there's nobody I'm excited about. You know, and I guess that's common, but it just seems hard to believe to me. Well, that there isn't, and I don't see there has to be a. I mean, the one thing Trump has going for him is at least. You know, there is an excitement there for people to see him. Now, I don't personally get it.
You don't see it, right?
but that's okay.
You still don't, huh?
At least there's excitement.
You don't see what people see in him.
I do see what people.
Okay.
No, I see what people see in him.
I just don't share in that.
Right.
But you're right. No, there's no. But I will say, if you ask me there's nobody that excites me the way. Here, I'll admit that I'm going to admit this on live radio. Nobody excites me the way when I voted for Bill Clinton the first time. Okay, when I said, wow, this is like, I think I felt the way people might have felt about, you know, Kennedy. Yeah, you know what I mean? I felt he's a Democrat and he says the right things, but he's already telling people we have to move more to the middle. And I was, you know, I was excited, to, back in those days. And I haven't, there's no one like that. I do think that I'm willing to expand my tolerance of who I'm looking at, you know, beyond, you know, that's why, and you say, Rich, really, you would really vote for Ben Carson? You know, people say that to me. And I say, well, I'm waiting, let's put it this way, I haven't dinged him out yet. What I mean?
Right.
You know what I mean?
That makes sense.
But part of that is because I think the country really does need, after this past tumultuous years, I think the country really does need a healer. And there's not a pun intended there. I mean, I think the next president is somebody who doesn't necessarily have to deliver on agenda, but I think really, I worry about the divisions in the country right now. You know, the anger, the divisions, the frustration.
Well, weren't we there 8 years ago?
I think we're so much worse now.
No, I don't know.
I know. Well, that's.
I'm not saying that it's any worse or better, but I am saying I do. I mean, we were harshly divided then. It seems like we've been harshly divided since 2000.
We've been harshly divided for the last three terms. The last three presidents.
Well, 15 years ago.
Yeah,
I mean, I think that.
I agree. That's you're right. And
Bush Gore.
And that's true. And I often think that that's something that actually can bring people together. Because I always tell people, look, as upset as you were when Bush won the election, okay, and as meaningless as you felt life was, okay, that's how we felt, okay. We have both after Obama won the second time, so we have both shared the same despair. We both come through it, and maybe that's something we actually can agree on.
So, but did you feel in 2008 in Mitt Romney you had a good candidate?
Oh, in 2012.
Excuse me.
I thought he was okay. I thought he was far superior to the other candidate.
I'm not telling. But I'm just talking about.
He was
the
fine.
People to select.
He was fine. He was fine. But I mean, look, I knew at that point. I knew that. There were bad things happening, in my opinion, on the other side. But you're right. I like you. I think a lot of us look and say, "Wow, is this really the best that America has to offer?" I don't think, in a way, I'm kind of glad. I would hate to think these are the best leaders that America has.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's sad that we don't have a better group on both sides, on every side.
But who wants to do that? I mean, this is the thing. I mean, who wants to go through that process?
Well, I'll go further, Joe. I think people do want to go through it, but you know what? We all say we want a better person. Okay. Well then, but how much work are people really willing to do? How many people are really getting their information from campaign ads and not, reading stuff? How many people are really going out and getting information? How many people are voting?
Well,
voting with their pocketbooks or whatever you want to call
but
it.
But this is what happens. I mean, I don't know. I think you do the same thing. Yeah. In fact, I know you do the same thing. You go out, you read stuff.
Right.
And then you make what you feel to be an informed decision. I go out and I make what I feel to be an informed decision. And then, then the Kardashians come on.
Yeah, exactly.
It doesn't seem to make any difference.
Well, and it's not even like you can go out and read stuff, right? Because you have to read stuff, and then you have to say, okay, well, who wrote that? You know what I mean? And then you say, all right, now I got to find somebody on the other side and get the other.
No, I understand.
Yeah, it's tough. But no, I think people could work a little harder. I think that we could. I don't know how you do this. I think you could demand better debates. One thing I don't get. We were talking about. I don't know why Trump, Fiorina, maybe Carson. I don't know why they don't just get together and have their own debate. I mean, they have the money. Why don't they just say, we're the only people, whichever ones, maybe throw in Marco Rubio or something, but maybe they get together and say, why are we letting you folks run the agenda? We're going to have a debate.
Well, you make a good point, because I can't imagine if you went to Face the Nation and you said to them, hey, let's do an hour. Well, four of us, let's do an hour.
Well, Trump wouldn't do that, right? Trump would say, I'm going to pay for it. And then Carly would come and say, you don't have to pay for it because I'm sure I could sell advertising for this. And you would go to have a real 2-hour debate. I don't know why they haven't done
do
something like that.
Do you think they want that?
Well, Trump wouldn't because he's leading, right?
But I
think it would be.
And so far he hasn't shown that he knows a tremendous amount.
Go back and look at what. Now, I understand that Trump's positions don't have the deep intellectual significance of, wait for it, Hope and Change, okay,
yes.
that got somebody, 42 million votes. But I think that Trump has been, believe it or not, I think this is how superficial we are. Trump has probably talked more in depth on issues than...
Finish your sentence. I'm sorry.
Than anybody else running right now.
First of all, at this stage in the campaign. How dare you pull the pin on that hand grenade as we're out of time? How dare you?
Well,
you should have done that 10 minutes ago, for God's sakes.
Well, I'll see you in October.
All right. Well, we'll talk again. It'll be very fun. We'll know so much more after months from now. Rich Onan is a partner in Phillips Lytle LLP, where he's partner in charge of the Albany office. And for more information on the firm, you can visit their website, PhillipsLytle.com. PhillipsLytle.com. Rich, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.